to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
When we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half, we have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Usako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
El diablo está en casa, pues. El diablo.
Lep pozdrav v še eni oddaji Južna hemisfera, ki na Radio Študent izide vsakih 14 dni, sicer bolj ali manj redno. Tokrat bomo šli na zahod, na jug, v Južno Ameriko in sicer v Venezuelo. Pogovarjali smo se z podpornikom Chavezove revolucije, ki pa je hkrati tudi oster kritik nekaterih posegov, ki jih je upeljal Chavez v to južnoameriško državo. Na začetku smo ga vprašali, na čemu je temeljila Chavezova kampanja za tretji predsedniški mandat, na katerem je pač na teh volitvah je Chavez dobil z nekje 55% podporo volivcev. Govoril pa bo tudi o ključnih razlikah med Caprilosom, se pravi njegovim nasprotnikom v tej volilni borbi. Pač govor bo o tem, da je Chavez ustraja na nekem določenem tipu socializma, za katerega se sicer točno ne ve, kaj točno to je. Zvedeli boste, da je pač ta grassroot gibanja, ki jih Chavez podpira in tudi financira, so pač močno pripomogli k temu, da je njegova politika ostala na, na prestolu. Torej, poslušamo prvi del.
The main issues in the campaign were obviously issues related to the role of the state in the economy, issues of distribution, issues of Venezuela's geopolitical position in Latin America in relation to the United States. Chavez offered to continue along the road of constructing a socialist alternative, even if it's not clear exactly what this means in the world today, I mean socialism, the discourse was presented basically in terms of the idea of socialism, which is associated with some notion of both equality and popular grassroots participation. For the opposition in Venezuela, which is heterogeneous and not necessarily with similar political perspectives, there is a radical criticism of the role of the state in Venezuela, the importance of the state in control of several very important industries, basically the oil industry, but not only that. And there is a questioning of the type of alliance and the type of relation that Venezuela has with the rest of the world, and specifically with Latin America, while, for instance, in relation to oil and international policies related to oil, the Chavez government has established the notion that there should be solidarity trade with countries in Latin America that don't have any oil, so they have better prices and long-term credits, like for the Caribbean countries that have no oil. And this is seen by the opposition, and it was seen by Capriles as sort of giving away Venezuelan riches and giving away Venezuelan oil to others while there were so many problems in Venezuela. So, I mean, there's a big difference in relation to how the Venezuelan insertion in the world is seen.
Na tem mestu se moram upravičiti, ker sem pozabil predstaviti, kdo je sploh bil naš sogovornik. Gre za profesor sociologije na Centralni venezuelski univerzi, Edgardo Landermo je ime. No, zdaj bom nadaljeval s tem, kaj je bilo tisto ključno, da je pač Chavez dobil teh 55%.
On the other hand, the impact of Chavez's social policies during the last 12-13 years have been enormous for the popular excluded sector of the Venezuelan population. If you look at all the main social indicators in Venezuela, all these have improved significantly over the last decade or so. There has been a significant reduction of poverty, significant reduction of extreme poverty. Venezuela is today the least unequal society in Latin America, in a continent that's the most unequal continent in the world, but inequality has decreased significantly. There is more food consumption. There is a significant increase in access to education and health services. But there's also a sense of political transformation in popular political culture, in the sense that people have a sense of being able to organize and participate and decide. And that's probably the most important thing that has happened. As a consequence, Chavez has a solid backing among the poorer sectors of the population, which are obviously the majority of the Venezuelan population. And although Capriles has made some important inroads into these sectors, his support, his solid hardcore support, came basically from the more well-off sectors of the population. And this is clear when you look at the different electoral districts in Venezuela and see where Chavez got the majority and what type of majority where Capriles won. And Capriles basically only won in districts that had sort of a majority of middle class. And, I mean, that's a class split that's very clear in Venezuelan politics today.
Torej, kot pravi Lander, prihaja v Venezueli do zelo radikalne polarizacije med že tradicionalno izključenim revnišnim slojem na eni strani, na drugi strani bolj situiranim srednjim slojem in pač mnogi zahodni ali pa bolj recimo mediji, ki niso toliko privrženi socialnim projektom, kritizirajo prav Venezuelo zaradi njene domnevne nedemokratičnosti. Zaradi tega smo vprašali Landerja, kakšni so tisti ključni problemi znotraj Venezuele glede demokracije njihove. Govor bo iz perspektive seveda južnoameriškega intelektualca, ki pač zelo kritično gleda na demokracijo v Evropi in v Ameriki.
There's obviously problems with democracy all over the world, and it depends on how you understand democracy. From current debates in Latin America, there is a radical criticism of what liberal democracy has meant for Latin America. Liberal democracy has meant for Latin America a Eurocentric, colonial, monocultural mode of exclusion that has denied the pluricultural character of the societies. When the model of citizenship in liberal democracy is imported from basically the European experience and imposed on these heterogeneous societies, it basically means that a great majority of the population is excluded from any notion of citizenship, and the only way in which indigenous people or Afro-descendants, etc., could become citizens is to give up their communities, to give up their culture, to give up their other alternative notions of decision-making and community and power and legal structures, etc., and become incorporated fully into this monocultural liberal mode of democracy. If you look at Europe today, at the European Union, in terms of classic liberal perspectives, such as the separation of power, you could say that democracy is flourishing in the European Union. However, in terms of issues such as popular sovereignty or the capacity of voters to have real options and being able to decide between alternative futures, I think that citizens of the European Union no longer have a choice. The difference between liberal, conservatives, and social democrats has all but disappeared, and the market seems to impose the most important political decisions. One perspective, neoliberalism has been enshrined in what constitutes the constitution of the European Union, that is, the Lisbon Treaty. And the current crisis has been an opportunity to advance the neoliberal agenda and take further steps in the dismantling of the welfare state. I think this can be probably called post-democratic societies. In Venezuela, in spite of all the problems, Venezuela's voters had a choice between two different models of society, and a significant majority voted for one of its alternatives. So I would say that Venezuela today is a much more democratic society than the societies of the European Union.
Nadaljujemo z venezuelskim vstopom v južnoameriški trgovinski sporazum Mercosur, v katerem so udeležene Urugvaj, Brazilija, Argentina, morda še katere se zdaj ne spomnim. Gre pa za prosto trgovinski sporazum, ki predstavlja nek odgovor na organizacijo ameriških držav, ki je nekako podobno, ampak problem je v tem, je te organizacije v tem, da so vsi vzvodi več ali manj vlečeni preko Washingtona. Lander bo pač govoril o tem, zakaj je ta sporazum za Venezuelo in za tudi ostale južnoameriške države pomemben. In pa v bistvu smo ga vprašali, ker Mercosur ne bi malo temeljil na modelu Evropske unije, sploh tega trgovinskega dela, ki pač se je izkazal zdaj v tem trenutku za ne najbolj funkcionalnega. In na podlagi tega smo ga vprašali, kako vidi Mercosur kot kot sistem, ki ne bi pač v tem delu sveta deloval.
Basically, Mercosur is a much more modest and less ambitious proposal than the European Union. It is basically a free trade treaty, not much more. However, it has been an important part of the process of Latin American economic and political integration and coordination in search for regional autonomy, along with other modes of coordination and integration that have been created more recently, like the Union of South American Countries, UNASUR, and the Community of Latin American and Caribbean Countries. There has been a struggle over the last decade, say, between different visions of integration in Latin America. One has been the United States-led mode of integration, and politically that has been represented by this old organization, which is the Organization of American States, which is based in Washington and has been controlled by Washington over its long history. And economically, this was the U.S. proposal for all of the Americas, sort of a free trade agreement of the Americas, which was basically a sort of European Union-type model in which neoliberal policies were to be enshrined in the constitutions of all these countries, and any contradiction between the constitutions of these countries and the free trade agreement had to be solved by the way of changing the constitutions. There was a widespread grassroots mobilization against the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, or FTAA, and the coming into power of the so-called progressive governments led to the defeat of this proposal. So there's a process in which there's an attempt led by different governments and led by sort of different sorts of social demands to construct alternative modes of integration in Latin America. These are all sort of parallel and somewhat convergent processes of integration that have in mind basically the idea of more autonomy for Latin America and breaking away from the notion that Latin America is the United States' backyard. And this has really had a significant impact in several ways. First place, there's obviously much more political autonomy in decision-making in Latin America today than there was even a decade ago. There has been an increase of sort of in modes of insertion in the world economy as China has become much more important for Latin America than it was a few years ago. That means that Latin America is not as dependent on the U.S. market or U.S. investments as it was a few years ago. And that has been significant in terms of political and economic autonomy. So none of these integration proposals or organizations is really sort of well-rounded or complete alternative. It's, I think that what you can see in Latin America basically sort of a search for integration models, both economic and politically, that had this notion of autonomy, had this notion of sort of coordinating policies, but there's obviously enormous problems in the fact that if you want to have an alternative economic model, you would have also to change internal policies, and you will have to sort of define other modes of production directed to the needs of the Latin American population, and that's not necessarily the case. The thing that worries me most is the fact that in all these processes, in spite of all these progressive governments and in spite of all this integration processes, there has been an increase in the dependency on primary good exports. Latin America has become more dependent on commodities than it ever was in its history, and that hasn't changed with this progressive government. So there are limits so far to this integration process.
Južna Amerika že kar nekaj časa se bori za to, da ne bi bilo dvorišče Združenih držav Amerike, in v tem boju se na tem kontinentu že nekaj časa tudi razvijajo nove in inovativne strategije, kako to doseči. Levica, tudi zelo radikalna, je na tem kontinentu zelo prisotna. Venezuela je ena bolj, bolj progresivnih, mogoče, če lahko temu tako rečemo, držav. Seveda tudi Ekvador, Bolivija in tudi druge države imajo kar leve vlade in predsednike. Zdaj, z Landerjem smo za konc še pogovarjali o tem, kako je mogoče na eni strani demokracijo, na drugi strani socialno enakost nekako poskušati združiti, če na nek način pozabimo te socializme, ki so se zgodili v 20. stoletju. V prvem delu tega odgovora na moje vprašanje je govoril o specifiki bolj Ekvadorja in Bolivije, kjer pač so še staroselci, pač zelo veliko različnih staroselskih skupnosti in je pač ta neka monokulturna, kako on temu reče, demokracija zelo problematična. Potem bo pa se še ustavil na domačem terenu, se pravi v Venezueli, kjer bo poudaril neke ključne antagonizme njihove vzpostavljanja demokratičnosti na njihovih tleh.
That varies a lot in different Latin American countries, as Latin American countries are very diverse. For some countries, especially for countries like Ecuador and Bolivia that had a very significant indigenous population, the main issues had to do not with socialism as such, but with a search for the construction of a pluricultural state. And that's a very complicated proposal, because it means an attempt to construct a state which recognizes the existence of different cultures, but not in terms of liberal multiculturalism, in the sense of just recognizing different languages or different religious beliefs, but it's a recognition of different forms of organization, different forms of property, not only liberal sort of private property. It means different legal systems, different educational systems, and that's really, a completely different notion of how to organize society and a different notion of democracy. And this obviously leads to conflicts. Conflicts on one hand on the privileged sector of the population in their attempt to keep their monopoly on political power, but it's also conflicts that have to do with sort of cultural transformations on the recognition of this diversity and the recognition of new modes of articulation of these differences. And that leads necessarily to important conflicts, and that's the case especially in Bolivia and Ecuador. In Venezuela, where the discourse is more directed to the notion of socialism, I would say that the basic problems that are faced are the following. In the first place, the recognition of the pluricultural character of the society, even though the indigenous population is not as significant as it is in other countries, it's still a very important issue whether the indigenous territorial rights are recognized or not. And this has led to important struggles on the part of the indigenous population, because in spite of the constitution, there has been no significant recognition of territorial rights. And the preservation of their lives and culture depend basically on recognition of territorial rights. A second issue is the fact that I think that rentism and this high dependence on oil is basically incompatible with real democracy in the following sense. If you have a state that has such a control of all of society's resources as the Venezuelan state has had, not now, but historically over the last 100 years, this means that you have a highly centralized state-centered political system. And this highly centralized state-centered political system obviously establishes limits to democracy. This has to do with the tensions related to how popular grassroots organizations relate to the state. And there is a huge tension in Venezuela, because on one hand, over the last few years, there has been an enormous increase in terms of people organizing, participating. There is much more grassroots political organization in Venezuela than there was, say, 12 years ago. But on the other hand, many of these organizations are very highly dependent on state financing. And this leads to conflict in terms of whether these organizations can actually sort of define their own agendas and sort of define their own struggles and define the decision-making process in terms of their own view of their problems, or whether these are imposed from above, basically because the state has the capacity to finance or not what this organization decides. So I think the role of oil and the state-centered character of Venezuelan society and its conflicts with sort of this increasing process of grassroots organization and sort of the main conflict related to democracy in Venezuela today.
Torej, s tem zaključujemo današnjo južno hemisfero. Večji del nje je bil v etru profesor sociologije na Centralni venezuelski univerzi Edgardo Lander, ki je govoril o Chavezu, Capriles-u, demokraciji, socializmu, Mercosurju. Torej, vodo sem oddajal Gregor Kuhar, na drugi strani je bil Rok, naslišanje čez 14 dni. Lep pozdrav.
Globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that a bit all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.